This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
I'm back. Judy McGuire is still out on Rumspringer, running around Ireland, checking out the whiskey, I hope. She'll be reporting back next week. But here we are back in Bushwick and back with the people of Dish. The Dish, one of the best food reading series in the world. And that's Kimberly Weatherell and David Gutowski. Kimberly is also the proprietor of Spirited, the new dessert speakeasy in Crown Heights and
Prospect Heights.
Prospect Heights.
Prospect Heights.
Prospect Heights.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I just might notice it. Do not say Crown Heights.
Oh, I do.
Prospect Heights.
I should be so.
Far good. More respectable. How you found yourself in Prospect Heights, though, well, we'll get to that. And David, who runs Large Hearted Boy, which is a monolith, a long-running book and music blog that I've been fortunate enough to contribute to. It's a lot of fun, and I'm going to talk to both of them about their endeavors and Dish. But let's talk about Spirited, the dessert speakeasy. It's booze and sweets.
It is. It's also sweets and booze. We do a little bit of everything. It's a craft cocktail bar. It is a bakery where the common ingredient that I work with is alcohol. So
nice.
It is 100% alcoholic treats.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, me too, ironically, yeah. So we have an in-house plated menu, so it's a great date spot, you know, a nice second stop, as it were. And Vanderbilt Avenue, we're on the corner of Bergen Street and Vanderbilt Avenue in Prospect Heights, and we are on the restaurant row, really, of Prospect Heights. So we have amazing savory restaurants, and what the neighborhood really needed was a place to go after
the second stop on your date. So you're saying,
yes,
I'll get lucky if I go to Spirited.
I'm just gonna say that the second might not be the final stop on your date.
Well, when it comes to, you know, so much is written about aphrodisiacs and oysters and booze and this and that, but what better than something filled with cream
and chocolate and booze
and more booze
sauce and, yeah, boozy sauce.
Without booze, I don't know how anybody would get laid without booze.
I don't know either. I don't know how anybody would get born. isn't that the warning they say? Caution, booze may cause pregnancy.
I'm not ashamed to say it's been the secret of my success. well, I haven't been there yet, unfortunately, but I know you just opened. It's been 3 weeks. I mean, it takes a lot of balls to open a place. I admire anybody who starts something from new, and, you know, as well as, like, even just starting a blog like what David has, and it's grown so much, and to maintain it and to be proprietary. I mean, your blog is, like, amazing. I don't know anything else that is like it.
Well, thank you.
he's a man of many words, David is.
Well, for those who haven't seen Large Hearted Boy, haven't visited it, you share, obviously you review books and you review music, but your great feature to me has always been your playlist, where authors put together playlists, and it's easy to link to other places on the internet, music, kind of the soundtracks to their books, and I've been fortunate enough to do a couple of them, first for I Have Fun Everywhere I Go, and later for the Carnivore's Manifesto, and I kind of took a weird, you know, take on it, but I'm sure some people are more literal.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny how sometimes people will take different tacks. They'll take sometimes they'll take the characters themselves, will make their own playlists. Sometimes they'll list the music that they listened to while they wrote the book. And sometimes they'll try and recontextualize the book through a playlist of music. Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting to see how these things are received by the readers, because I've had people say, oh, you know, this writer liked The Replacements, so I'm going to go buy that book. and myself, I tend to really respect the ones that are more essay formatted, that develop a theme all the way through. But it's always interesting to see what people are listening to.
Like my list about what you should listen to while drinking beer in the shower.
Most definitely.
That's a good list.
Oh, yeah, it's very
good. Oh, I should go check that out. As a reader, I mean, I met David through social media, through the internet. I was actually a fan before I was a friend. And I always enjoyed the book notes where the authors had made a list of what they were listening to while they were writing. Because as a former quasi-writer myself, music is a big influence mm-hmm. on whatever sort of emotional tone I was feeling or whatever I wanted the character to come out. You know, if somebody was a big, you know, 80s music fan, so I would really crank up the new 80s new wave.
I'm big on Mozart. It's like all I can listen to while I work.
Yeah.
I can't deal with anything rock and roll. Anything with a beat makes me nuts.
I've heard Mozart makes you smart.
Well, here I am, proof to the contrary. but it just fills the room with energy for me, but it doesn't get in my way. You know, Beethoven, just too much going on. Any of the late romantics, a little tricky for me. Jazz, except with the exception of Dexter Gordon, oddly, because he's easy enough. It's not that complex.
Yeah.
I can groove with it, you know, but anything with lyrics or anything with too much of a beat that's driving pulls me away from my work. I can't do it. What are some of the odder takes? I mean, like with my book, I mean, it would have been easy because the Ramones were mentioned in these bands that I had opened up with or played for or whatever. Say, okay, here are the Ramones and here's Sonic Youth and here's the Blues Explosion or here are the Dictators or, oh, I talk about how much I love Chuck Berry and I could throw that in there too, but that seemed to be a little bit on the nose for me.
Well, I think the most interesting one so far was probably Shalom Auslander, who wrote one for his last novel, and he listed an entire album of white noise, which had different, every noise had a different color. And he went through that. But then there's also one by Kevin Barry for his debut novel. And he talked about how much he hated living in Ireland. But he lived there because there was nothing else to do except for him to write. And so he wrote this very melancholy, he shared this melancholy Irish playlist.
Writers are a fucked up bunch of people. Don't you
they
think?
Are.
And what about food writers? Are they more or less fucked up than the rest of us?
Well, food writers are, I find, I mean, I've not met a lot of food writers until we started the Dish Reading
series. Well,
you've
gotten great press right out of the gate. Like, really nice words written about your place, though.
Oh, well, in that respect, I love food writers. They are my favorites. But in reference to Dish for the reading series, we find it really interesting because we have such a variety of food writers. We have chefs we have who don't know anything about writing. They're at most, they can interpret a recipe, but then they'll have to have a ghostwriter to actually write it down because they're artists, and it's hard to, I mean, as I'm working on my own book right now, actually writing down the things that I do is quite hard because a lot of times if I'm working with a certain booze, like today, this morning, I made mascarpone frosting with Lillet Rosé, but like kept, I had to keep adding and keep adding and tweaking as I go, and maybe I forgot to write down exactly what it was I was doing so I can replicate it by taste. But then you also have these really prolific memoirists who use food as a backdrop, or you have someone who's incredibly analytical who's dissecting the food commodity world. And at Dish, we really have such a wide range of people who write about food. It's really interesting to see where people ebb and flow in their writing and communication abilities.
Well, I'd hope that people who come to a food writing, people who are performing and reading, really had that hedonistic spirit, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes people can be scientists, and some people can be, a lot of food writing, people are, you know, there's a lot of finger wagging going on. You know, people like a bit of a scold about what you eat and what you shouldn't eat. And it's not celebratory all the time.
Have we found that?
I think that most of our writers have, they've really enjoyed what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And what I found especially interesting about Dish is we've tried to get a diversity of writers. And how well the audience actually connects with them compared to any other reading series I've ever been involved with or ever been to. The Q&A sessions would last forever if we let them.
Mm-hmm.
There's such a unique connection between the audience and the writers because it's a common bond of food.
Well, what we always said when we were doing the Carnivore's Manifesto was that food is very intimate. You put it in your mouth. And what personal relationship could you have? You know, and there you got food on your reading thing, so it's not about some random topics. I mean, we talked about this. Readings suck. And especially when you go
to the worst.
Readings suck, okay? They're boring. But poetry readings, oy, gavalt. I mean, some people are great at it, but not everybody can be Greg Corso.
Right.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately. And then, by the way, I found that the opposite is true. Like, I'm not a big Jack Kerouac fan. I think On the Road is an incredible snooze, but I was very inspired by the records he made, which is sort of where I got my concept of writing with playing with a jazz band. I think he's a tremendous reader of his own material, and on the page, it just kind of dies for me. But once you bring food and the event that I was last at, I mean, you were giving people cocktails, which I find
helps. We always do that. We set up the series in the course of a meal. So we've waffled between 3 and 4 courses, but always there's a drinks, a dinner, and a dessert course. More or less, where
as it should be,
minimum 3 courses, and we're both David and I are huge fans of the local spirits and distilling industry, and so if it's not a book per se, like Warren Bobrow's Apothecary Cocktails or Tim Federle's Tequila Mockingbird, at the very least, we can get a local spirit distiller to come in, and it's a storytelling time, so they're going to talk about what inspired them to distill their local spirit and entrepreneurship. So it's not just books. It's also a lot of storytelling. And those are fascinating.
I love that there's sort of been a renaissance of high-end spirits. I mean, I have some bad habits. I mean, I like really expensive Calvados and Armagnac and really good bourbon. I mean, I'll drink. We were talking about this before. I mean, Speed Rack bourbon, some of it's okay.
It works.
I proudly drink 10 High, you know, and Evan Williams, because there's a time and a place for everything. But the people are making fabulous whiskey in Brooklyn, like bourbon-style whiskey and also Scotch whiskey. What are some of your favorites? I mean, previously, there's no way I would have even thought about drinking any whiskey product that that didn't come from the state of Kentucky.
Well, but see, you've got the Kings County Distillery in the Navy Yard, who's been making... They were the first and might be the oldest... whiskey distillers in Brooklyn of this current wave. Mm-hmm. Obviously, way back, there was tons of distilling and brewing going on in Brooklyn. And then you have the Brooklyn Distilling folks, which they make a full New York State wheat whiskey and a corn rye. And their grain is from New York State. Everything is distilled in New York State. You've got Cacao Prieto, who makes the Widow Jane bourbon, which is incredible local bourbon. So as far as the whiskey and brown spirits go, Brooklyn's got you covered.
I'm gonna investigate that. I mean, we talked a lot in the Carnivore book about terroir, and you know, I mean, certain things you can do in New York, bagels, that you can't do in San Francisco because of the water, because you know you need to be at sea level, because of the terroir, as Patrick would say, about the culture, the existing culture that you know is here. But the concept of making whiskey in Brooklyn, I can dig it.
It works.
And I was gonna add, you can't really talk about whiskey without talking about Bren.
Oh, gosh, no. Of course.
Which it's not made in New York City or Brooklyn, but the woman is from New York City, and they make it in France.
Cognac, actually. It's the first French single malt whiskey that is aged in cognac barrels.
Nice. So it's finished in the cognac barrels, and it's so smooth and so sweet. It's unlike anything I've ever had, but it is probably, I owe, you know, knowing Kimberly... discovering it, it's the best spirit I've had in the last 5 years.
I've gotten a lot of people drunk in my career. happily.
What a good job.
You know,
you're just bringing joy everywhere you go. Well, you call yourself a bake tender now.
I do call myself a bake tender because I can deconstruct a cocktail better. Well, maybe than anyone I know. That sounds really braggy. But I honestly can't build them. My bartenders would disagree, but I think I would be a terrible bartender.
You mean actually mixing?
Actually making the cocktail. But I'm much better at having somebody deliver me a beautiful cocktail and then deconstructing it and turning it into a dessert. So I actually, inspiration for recipes tend to be cocktail books, and I especially love vintage cocktails.
So I love old Mr. Boston.
You look Mr. Boston, you look at the original Trader Vic's cocktail recipe, you look at the Savoy cocktail book, you look at all these bartender handbooks. That's actually where I get my recipes from, because I'll find a crazy cocktail and then I'll figure out what works in dessert form.
I think this is a good trend. You know, I mean, that people are making handcrafted cocktails, going back to the old thing. I know I always hear a lot of backlash, like, oh my God, you know, because they're expensive, they're time consuming, and do I really need you just like to spend 45 minutes making my Tom Collins? And the answer is, isn't better better?
Better is better. And I will argue, as a business person, you don't want to wait 45 minutes for Tom Collins. You want to wait like 4 minutes, 5 minutes tops.
But I love that everybody's got a proprietary take on a Manhattan or an old-fashioned with some sort of cool bitters or something that grew in their backyard. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic.
Agreed.
So what are you doing over there with your rye whiskey? You putting vanilla ice cream in it?
No, with rye, actually, we've got we have an end of summer menu that's going to be phasing out in about 2 weeks, and then we're going to be bringing in a new fall menu because, as a chef,
seasonal
cocktails.
I'm so square.
Because it would,
I don't think about this. It's
it would it would be inappropriate to have a Prosecco cocktail in November.
Oh,
so you're going to want something
gauche,
heartier. Well, maybe not gauche, but. But, you know, so but keeping the idea that the entire place is seasonal and that we work with what's available, we'll do the same thing with spirits that we do with food.
Sounds good. Tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Large Hearted Boy and how we distribute books and music and the changing world in which we live. You're listening to Arts and Seizures. We're going to take a break. We're going to go back to my book notes, my playlist of drinking beer in the shower, what you should listen to while you're drinking beer in the shower. And one of the best records I discovered is the Cramps' Songs the Lord Taught Us. This is my greatest scholarly achievement, is when I realized that this record is in the exact same key as the shower itself. Which,
no way.
See? Beautiful music, harmony. Here we are on Arts and Seizures, the Heritage Radio Foundation. Hey, Liz in the booth, give it a twirl.
Super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Right on, back on Arts and Seizures. Mike Edison here with Kimberly Weatherell from Spirited and David Gutowski from Large Hearted Boy, and both of them of the Fabutastic Dish Reading Series. David, we were talking before about the changing world. I mean, you have this wonderful blog. You called yourself a dinosaur before, sort of like this one man running the storefront kind of operation that's not really the model anymore.
Well, I think it seems like a lot of websites now are collaborative, and they're more like magazines than they are blogs. When I started Large Hearted Boy in 2002, there were a lot of individuals that were blogging, and it was all about finding your voice and, in my case, sharing what I loved, which was books and music and popular culture. But nowadays it's all collectives, and it's just a changing world.
Has anyone ever tried to co-op you? Anybody get any offers? Hey, we'd like to buy Large Hearted Boy and make it part of our big corporate conglomerate.
I've had a couple, and when I was breaking down the finances of it, it just didn't make any sense. And also, I'm incredibly stubborn, and I like having control, and that I feel like there's a certain amount of integrity to Large Hearted Boy that I only share things that I do love, music and books. And I don't want to be co-opted in any way.
So how do people approach you when they want to distribute music through your site? You have great downloads, and it's great stuff. I mean, they're really top artists. It's not just like, you know, the Bushwick hipsters coming to you. It's like really amazing, world-class international talent.
It's all over the place, but I still find that even with the internet, my friends and this extended network I have over social media recommends more music to me than anyone else. And it works the same way with books. I'm much more likely to find a trusted source, a critic, or another writer, or even a friend.
Yeah, I agree. I think Large Hearted Boy is a trusted source. When I look at it, I definitely listen. And it's tough. I mean, I find it harder and harder. There's so much white noise out there and to figure out what's good and what's not good. But, I mean, is anybody actually listening or reading anymore? I guess certain people are. I mean, they must be. But everything is moving so fast, and I have this conversation with people. No one wants to hear a record. It's 12 songs. No one's got the time. And kids these days, I mean, I don't know what the fuck they do. I mean, it's like they listen to a song for 5 seconds, but then decide they don't like it and dismiss the artist's entire.
Well, that's it's the curse of streaming media, where you can just flip through everything. You don't have to. We don't have the curated streams of radio that we had, you know, even 10 years ago.
I love radio. I think radio is great, and I, you know, it's really weird. As I'm setting up, I just moved to a new house and I don't have the hi-fi set up, so I'm playing Pandora. And it's kind of amazing. Whoever the hipsters behind the scenes are connecting the dots back there that get me from Lou Reed to T-Rex to, you know, things that I really like. I put on the Captain Beefheart station and they start playing the Trogs. And I'm like, wow, I didn't see that coming. It's so awesome. Someone's thinking back there. I actually had this job one time for Columbia Record Club. Do you guys remember record clubs?
Oh, mm-hmm. I do. Right. Like, you probably 90, like 10 albums for a penny.
Right, you probably stole them. Like, you stole to buy 3 more records or 8 tracks.
Probably.
Right, 10 records for a penny.
Oh, college.
But the whole concept was, if you like this, then you'll like that.
Right.
And they're like, well, if you like Patti Smith, or if you like the Velvet Underground, or more likely if you like Simon and Garfunkel, a mainstream artist, where can we lead you, you know, to pitch? Because the flyers were all sort of marketed. I mean, it wasn't niche marketing and micro marketing that we have on the internet today, where, you know, if I search gorilla costume, I will have gorilla costumes in my stream and Facebook for the next 6 weeks at various price points. But the idea is, you can get from Simon and Garfunkel to Patti Smith, and from Patti Smith you can end up at Beethoven in just 5 steps.
Right.
Yeah.
And it works. It's amazing. I love the radio. I love the surprise.
Absolutely. And again, speaking as a fact that I was
a fan. If that's a fact, radio.
I was a fan of Large Hearted Boy before I knew David as a friend. That was actually one of the really great selling points about his blog, is that I got introduced to a whole bunch of new music that didn't cost me anything at first, because I can listen to...
At first.
No, but that's exactly it. That's why I listen. Like, I'm a huge fan of NPR's First Listen series, because this morning all I did was listen to Lucinda Williams' new album. I went and I I'm going to download it.
And
as
you
soon
paid
as
for
it's
it?
Like, I paid for it.
God bless you.
I pay for that stuff. But it's really great to get something. I mean, I think David's site is well curated. He doesn't just randomly throw up free and legal downloads. He throws up smart and interesting and creative free and legal downloads.
Because I do believe in curation.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people are trying to do that, but, you know, it has to be, I like having being a single voice.
It just smacks of a labor of love. Well, yeah. Large Hearted Boy, it's obviously you. It's not...
Yeah, I had someone walk up to me in Brooklyn about a month ago, and they mentioned a book that I'd covered, and they said, usually you have really good taste, but that book really sucks.
I remember you posted that on Facebook, and I love that. And I thought that was awesome.
Exactly.
I mean, I thought that was great. You know, I mean, that's great. Someone should have...
Well, you can't please everybody.
It's true.
But it's a combination of, like, someone who's, like, telling you that they love you, but has the brass to say, I don't always agree with you.
Right.
Exactly.
That's a high compliment. I take that as a high compliment. Hey, here's something I want to know. This is a little bit off topic, but you're the dessert maven, and we were talking about ice creams before, and we were talking about Breyers ice cream before.
We were talking about Breyers ice cream.
So in the vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry
ice cream, the Neapolitan,
mm-hmm. Why is the chocolate in the middle? Okay, because I think the vanilla should be in the middle.
That's a really good question. I mean, chocolate strawberry is good, vanilla chocolate.
Right,
but vanilla strawberry is also quite...
Right, but I don't really want chocolate and strawberry together. I mean, it seems like there's a discordant note there for me.
See, I think a lot of people do like chocolate with strawberry. They like that fruit and chocolate.
I think it would be better with the vanilla in the middle.
Okay. Well, we can...
Just think about this going forward.
Okay, should we contact Breyers International and corporate, see what we can
Breyers
do?
Breyers International. What kind of ice cream? Are you making your own ice cream over there, or are you
not
a local creamery?
Not yet. I applaud people who make alcoholic ice cream. People like Luca and Bosco, Tipsy Scoop. Trying to think of some of the other, Morgenstern's. They do like a Fernet Branca ice cream.
Fernet Branca is so good with ice cream.
I applaud them because I have not yet figured out how to make it... boozy enough and yet also stable enough,
right?
Because the alcohol doesn't freeze, so I end up with a lot of really delicious granitas and milkshakes.
Right.
But I have not conquered the boozy ice cream world, so I rely on others the drunken salty caramels, the Fernet strawberry ice creams of the world to come to me.
What's your top seller over there in the dessert world? The booziest one. Which is the one that's going to get me? I'm going to take my date to and get lucky.
Well,
let's just cut right to it. Well, what's the third date dessert that I need?
Well, that actually depends. And I hate when people respond that way. But if you just want to get drunk, if you just want to get drunk off your dessert, you're going to get the ironically, vegan and gluten-free Planter's Punch Parfait. So you have fruit that's macerated in a Planter's Punch, and we use local spirits, so we use Van Brunt Stillhouse's Due North Rum. So we macerate the berries, and we get a nice, really long, thick, boozy soak on that. And then we have this very light vegan gluten-free sponge cake, and then it's topped with Van Leeuwen artisan ice cream, and we use they have their new vegan line, and you can choose either pistachio or chocolate, but the booze content of that particular dessert is the highest because there's absolutely no cooking of the booze whatsoever. So you're just basically getting straight rum on top of your dessert.
I just thought when you started out, it was such a comment on our culture that you're saying it was gluten-free and vegan. And I'm thinking, before I found out about the sponge cake element of it, like, there's nothing in fruit or booze that wouldn't have gluten or something that a vegan couldn't enjoy.
Right,
and
you
yet
also
you want to put it out to them because somehow that's a thing now? Because, I mean, fruit, no gluten, right?
Right. No gluten, and no gluten in the particular alcohols that we use. But I would be a foolish business person, first of all, if I didn't offer, I wouldn't have a well-balanced menu if I didn't offer something for everyone. And a lot of times when I look at other dessert menus and when I was contemplating this, a lot of times the vegan dessert is fruit with soy, you know, cashew milk whipped cream or what have you. And I thought, you know, vegans like cake too. So let me put something.
So let them eat cake, in other words.
Let them eat cake. And so far, I mean, it's been a wonderful addition. And I ate it last night, and I am pro-meat, pro-gluten all the way. And I had it the other night for dessert, and it was stunning. So a meat, wheat eater totally just devoured that.
Meat and wheat.
Meat
that's,
and wheat.
That's going to be my new radio show.
I'm
meat
a fan.
And wheat. I'm gonna sign up. Tell us how to get to Spirited.
You can take the 2-3 to the Bergen stop.
Mm-hmm.
You can take the BQ to 7th Avenue. Or you can walk from Atlantic / Barclays Center, which it's only 4 blocks away.
So and how do we get home from Spirited?
You call a taxi.
Awesome. What's coming up with the Dish Reading Series?
We have October 1st, we have Green Hook Ginsmiths and the people from Brooklyn Pharmacy.
Mm-hmm. My new neighborhood, the Brooklyn Pharmacy, and we should talk about egg creams too, because I got to say, I should go there and confront them personally. I'm an egg cream maven, you know, I'm standing by Eisenberg's on 5th Avenue. That's the egg cream.
And we have Todd Davies, who wrote a book on Anarchist Jam.
Which sounds fantastic. Like the old school anarchist cookbook, it's going to explode.
But it's going to be explode with jam.
It's going to explosion of jam. Well, as ever, it has been the fastest half hour on the internet today. Tell us how to get in touch with you guys, and then let's eat this pizza.
You can go to facebook.com and / Dish New York. That's our only web presence.
Dish is there.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, some people ask me and they say, someone who's not on social media, like an older friend of mine, like, oh, there's this poetry reading we should go to. It's like, there hasn't been a poetry reading in New York in years. or look, there's going to be a reading downtown at this bar. Like, man, Facebook is really great. It's amazing how many people are actually at the reading. Of course, most of it sucks, but Dish definitely does not. And where do we find Spirited?
We find Spirited at spiritedbrooklyn.com, also on all social media at SpiritedBK.
Your website's great, by the way.
Oh,
it's dessert and booze pornography.
Pretty much.
All right. So, once again, for Kimberly and Dave, we're Large Hearted Boy.
LargeHeartedBoy.com.
LargeHeartedBoy.com, which is absolutely worth the price of admission.
Yeah, for sure.
No, it's fantastic. What's up there now today? Who's the book list this week? The book notes?
I'm trying to think who I've had this week. It's been a long week.
I want to go find, like, the Aslander Shalom's, because he's very, very, very funny.
Oh, he's fantastic.
I mean, his books are a hoot, and if it's really just going to be white noise, that sounds a good way to terrify the cat. All right, more seizures and arts in that department. All right, once again, it's been the fastest half hour on radio. For Mike, Kimberly, Dave, and Liz in the booth, we'll see you next week here on the Heritage Radio Network.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.